Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast Tech Time, brought to you by MissedApexPodcast.com. We live F1. And SummersF1.co.uk, the technical side of Formula One. Today's episode is called, How Did That Happen? I'm your host, Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by Matt Trumpets. How's it going, Matthew?
It's going pretty well. How about yourself, Mr. Spanners?
Well, I will confess that I am feeling a little squiffy as I spent the afternoon in the pub with friends and family. But since this is a Tech Time show, I knew the ship was in safe hands.
I see. So we've been having a few at the local pub then.
I'm not going to get into numbers or details. All I'm going to say is that I'm glad you're in charge.
You're starting to sound like our dear leader over here.
And we are getting the same kind of approval rating. Matt, I'm saddened to say that we received our first iTunes one-star review.
Oh no, did it mention me?
No, it didn't. Do you know what? All the good ones did mention you. So I'll start off by saying that across the US and UK iTunes, we've received many people are saying this is a good podcast. No, we've received loads of great feedback on iTunes, something like 30 reviews. And in the UK sports store, we're actually just off the first page. So I think if we get a little bit more of a push and people could spare the time to write us an iTunes review, I think we'll be on the front page of iTunes and the sports section. But we did have a one-star review by Dave Eva Blank. Unless you want to hear fawning all over Hamilton, there are many better options for your F1 podcast needs. I would recommend FormulaOneBlog.com. Ouch.
Ouch indeed. Although I have to wonder, did he actually or she listen to any of our actual podcasts? Because although we certainly have people who favor Hamilton, we have a fair number who absolutely do not.
I was going to say, I tend to get a fair amount of abuse for my ham-fossy fanboy lunaticness.
Yes, you do. And usually with good reason, but you know, everybody's got a favorite driver. I don't know. It sounds like to me a jealous competitor, if you ask.
But look, outweighed by the many great reviews. So once again, thank you very much for that. For those of you just finding us, we are an independent F1 podcast hosted by MissedApexPodcast.com. We aim to bring you your race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here, so you can play this with kids in the background or in the car and at work. Matt, we have a great lineup tonight.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to have indeed the tech man from Birmingham, Mr. Matthew Sommerfeld himself.
Hey, look, some people say that there are no interesting people from Birmingham ever. And I agree. I'd like to echo that. But maybe he's not the tech analyst you want, but he is the tech analyst you need. How's it going, Summers?
It's really good. How are you guys?
And joining us, we've got some backup from your side of the pond as well, Matt. From, I forget where, Canada, perhaps. Vortex Morty, how's it going, Ken?
Going well, thank you. How are you folks?
It's nice to see you without your signature spectacles, Ken. You seem like a much more attractive prospect.
Are you out there? Because I cannot see a thing.
I'm going to quit while I'm ahead, Matt. I'm going to hand it over to you and say the big dirty news this week is tech.
Big dirty news.
Yep, that's right. The big nerdy news is tech. And finally, after all of the doldrums of testing and all of the waiting, we've seen actual cars on actual tracks. And it turns out we have a few small, or in the case of Mercedes, not so small things to discuss. Isn't that right, Mr. Summers?
It is indeed. What a strategy blunder by the Mercedes boys, eh?
Indeed. Although, after reviewing the evidence, I'm going to have to go back and issue a little apologetic. I had been wholeheartedly in the how could they possibly have done that camp. But a few things have come to light. Number one, I think how much the new suspension or the lack of the new suspension hurt them. Number two, I suspect they had about zero actual tire data on the ultra softs. And number three, and most importantly, I think we all missed that because Mercedes, I mean, you can talk about Red Bull, but I think it's possible Mercedes has the best PR department on the planet. And I know that Bradley Lord won an award for that last season because we completely missed it when we were discussing why they did what they did. I think they were really in the dark and were just making the best guess they could. Now, what did you have to say about that?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there, Matt. The clarification over the suspensions, which obviously has favoured Ferrari, has hindered the two teams that have perhaps got the most advanced suspension, which would be Mercedes and Red Bull. And obviously, there's two issues there. There's data, which they have plenty of that from not only the pre-season test, but we also have to remember that those guys also supplied the mule cars to Pirelli. So if they're working from that data set to understand how these tyres operate and have a bit of an advantage over the rest of the field, that's going to obviously have an impact on where they stand if that suspension is suddenly taken away from them. It moves the data points around.
Yeah, and rather a lot. And this was also something that I thought was interesting. And now it's going to be very important here because what I'm about to say can easily be adopted by the tinfoil hat brigade. But prior to the testing for this year's change in tires, Pirelli's data, or their biggest chunk of data, came from that rather dubiously legal test they had done with Mercedes. That was the only running with a current car that they had done. Is that more or less right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem, isn't it? And this is the reason why Pirelli have asked for much more testing to happen in season so that they can develop their tyres. The problem always is getting the right data to be able to build the right set of tyres. Obviously, when we had Bridgestone and Michelin in the what people sometimes refer to as the heyday of Formula One, cars were just tramping around the world and also back on the test tracks back by their factories. So there was much more data to be gained in that era. And now Pirelli are really sort of struggling against that problem.
Yeah, they are. And I think what it led to in the Mercedes era was basically tires that worked really well for Mercedes, as much by happenstance as by design, although they were the only ones to go testing for Pirelli, despite the threat of FIA sanction. And now Pirelli has data from all three big teams, Red Bull, Ferrari, and indeed Mercedes. But Red Bull and Mercedes data from that test is kind of useless to them because their suspension has changed significantly enough that they can't really trust what they're seeing. And if as I remember from the race, they were asking Lewis to give them lots of calls about how the tires were doing. That's how nervous they were, and that's how anxious they were. And I think that impacted their thinking as they came up to their early pit stop. Yeah, Ken?
Well, wait, are you talking about the mule car tests, though, that they did last year in regards to RBR and Mercedes and Ferrari? Because those weren't all that relevant. I mean, they were able to get the compounds and the structures out and get some running under them, but they didn't really have the levels that they ultimately saw with the current generation cars at Barcelona. So I'm not seeing number one, that those were so helpful, except that to put the concepts that Pirelli had come out with to the ground and see whether or not they're how close they are. And then number two, in regards to the Barcelona tests with the current generation cars, I don't think Mercedes ended up running the ultrasofts very much. And I think that's the blind spot that you're alluding to in regards to their strategy, that they were became so dependent upon the feedback from the driver. Hey, how's the tire? And everybody was very much seat of the pants compared to what we've seen in the past in prior race strategies. Am I off there? Or
well, there's two things out of that conversation, isn't there? There's the mule cars, which you have to remember that although that data was shared amongst all of the teams, the data realistically only really has a resemblance to what Mercedes, Ferrari and Red Bull wanted them to know. They are the ones that own the IP for those cars. So they're not, everybody else can only discern what they wanted from that information. I mean, I've said this before, if I was involved in those tests, I would have made my car handle in a very specific way in order that I knew what that data correlated to and the rest of the teams didn't. There was some FIA, technical directives along with that. I do have copies of those technical directives that were run with the mule cars. So obviously they couldn't just do everything that they wanted, but there was some slack in there for them to make some alterations so that only they could glean what they wanted from the information. It's not the be all and end all at the end of the day, as you say, Ken, but it has had an impact, in my opinion, on the way that those cars ran in Australia.
And I just want to throw in from my point of view, the difference would be that Red Bull and Mercedes were running with their hydraulic suspension when Pirelli took how they handled on the tires into account and designed them. And now that they're not only are Red Bull and Mercedes left chasing data, but it could well be that the tires are not really optimal across all three manufacturers the way they would have been. And if you're a tinfoil hat wearer, you might almost think that they would have wanted to favor anyone but Mercedes anyway, especially with new owners coming in and everyone desperate for someone besides Mercedes to be in the championship hunt. I'm not going to say that happened. I don't think that happened, to be honest with you, but I know it will be said. So there you go, getting in front of it.
Yeah, we'll get the tinfoil hat out again like we did at Christmas.
That was delightful, wasn't it? Yeah. All right. So, but that's not the only problem that Mercedes have. They've done two things. First of all, they have the longest wheelbase in the field, which I think is a bit of a surprise because everyone was saying that was going to be Red Bull's trick. So what's up with that, Summers?
Well, firstly, I think that was a mistake by the FIA to allow what's happened. The ratio of the car, we wanted wider cars. Everybody wanted to look at a wider car. Yet the ratio has been allowed to remain as it was before. So all of the teams have simply lengthened the car, changing the mere fact of the way that the aero moves around the car. Now, obviously, Mercedes wanted to have this very similar philosophy to they had last year, which is the multi-element sort of front of the floor, front of the wing, front wing, etc. And obviously, they need a particularly long wheelbase to make that effective. And I believe that's why Mercedes have gone down that route, but obviously it has hurt them in other respects as well.
So specifically that would hurt them in regards to the ability of the chassis to change directions quickly. Is that the way that would hurt them, or what are be specific there?
Okay. So these elements where they have multi-elements, they're used to refine the airflow. And obviously if the tire, we've already talked about the tires being not quite in the optimal window to how they want, if those aren't operating as they effectively thought they would do, then that's going to have an impact on the airflow around the car as well itself. So I think we might see some changes from Mercedes in terms of their aero parts around the front wing and the barge boards, etc., to nullify perhaps the changes they've had to make to the suspension components. But yeah, it's all about field flow around the front end of the car and setting up the airflow that meets to the floor and the diffuser. And that's all about, obviously, making sure that the airflow goes where you need it to go.
Excellent. And the other thing that we've heard about Mercedes that I'm curious about is that they are a little bit on the nearly not fat side, as it were.
Hey, yeah. I resemble that remark.
Yeah, apparently they're 5 kilograms overweight. So the car weight has gone up this season. We're up to 729 kilograms. So if the reports are correct, they're obviously up to 734 kilograms. Now, you obviously want to be as close to that weight limit as you possibly can. In fact, you want to be under it by quite a margin so that you have the ballast to play around with. And if we believe, which I don't, Christian Horner, he said that he's not using the HPC suspension because it's too heavy. So there's a lot of wordplay going on early on in the season in terms of this. And obviously we've also heard about Sergio Perez having to lose weight to get the Force India close to the weight limit as well. So weight's always an issue because it means that you're losing performance. That 5 kilograms is about 0.2 seconds per lap.
See, we talk about this a lot with karting summers. We're talking about like what effect does the weight really have? And I was trying to say, well, maybe that extra stone or so, you know, gives me more grip and more downforce and more mechanical grip. But I suppose in reality, it just means the tires are working harder on the corners, the brakes are working harder. You know, even if you've got that available power, it's slowing down into the corners as well, that where you'll suffer.
It's not only that. In terms of karting, it isn't so much of an issue with weight. The problem with Formula One is downforce. So all the time that you're putting on more weight, you're having to accelerate that weight through the corner. And that means you need more downforce to achieve the same goal. So take that 5 kilograms away from Mercedes, and obviously they'll be able to accelerate the car through the corner that little bit much more quicker. So, yeah, it's a difficult one for Mercedes. They'll certainly need to trim that fat.
So you're saying that this is a problem Mercedes and Force India are having, but perhaps not Ferrari, their direct championship competitor?
It's a possibility. We don't know what the cars weigh, that we don't have that information. But from reports that have come out, Mercedes are over by 5 kilograms. And we know that Perez has been put under pressure to lose a little weight in order to help Force India. So there's two markers in the sand. We don't know where everybody else is.
Thing is, Ocon is lucky he's 12 because he's about 8 foot tall. When he gets some man weight there, some life around the middle, he's going to be, you know, in a potentially very difficult situation.
Yeah, he is rather tall. That's always Hülkenberg's problem. And that's something that should really be addressed within the regulations more accurately.
Some balance.
He's sorting out the weight issue for drivers because there's such a difference between, say, your the smaller drivers versus the Hülkenbergs and the Ocons of the world.
Yeah, that would be almost a smart and forward looking thing for them to do to equalize the pilot's weight as part of the overall weight that the car was allowed to have. I don't know. Maybe they'll think of it now that Ross Brawn is in charge. But I had read, I used to do look at fuel effect calculations. And if I'm remembering correctly, it was around 0.3 for every 10 kilograms of weight in terms of lap time is what I remembered. Is that more or less correct?
I think it depends on the era of the car that we're looking at, to be honest, because you have to remember how much more weight we've got on this car anyway. So the figures are going to differentiate. The figures that you're talking about when we were doing fuel saving, the cars weighed a lot less in the first place. So that there'll be a delta between those times.
So, yeah, and Matt, that's a great question. And I'm gonna waffle on that as well because I don't know off the top of my head. But what I do know is that is going to be circuit dependent, and so you may be in the right ballpark as to what the penalty is. But I mean, it's important to remember, you know, to expand on Summer's point that additional weight it hurts performance, not just in corner speed as far as whatever downforce you have, you're having to work that much extra weight to keep that attached to the track or keep the grip there. But in addition, it's going to affect braking. You have more weight to slow down, so that means your braking point is going to come back a little bit, another meter or so that a driver has to be on the brakes. And also it affects the rate of acceleration as well. I mean, it's all ratios, but it's a critical component to the performance.
Yeah, in fact, in the comments, Matthew Graff is calling for Liberty to open up some of this car data to those of us who are enthusiasts so we can have a better idea of what the teams are really up to. Do you think that would fly?
Honestly, no. because the teams are so secretive. They don't want the data being shared amongst the other teams. That's the problem, you know. So allowing it into the free stream is just a problem to them in terms of their competitors. It gives up some of their advantage, effectively allows their competitors to know where they stand.
Well, then could that not be a good thing for the sport? I mean, I'm not talking about data that they collect themselves, but stuff like when the cars get weighed, how much the cars weighed, when they go through scrutineering, that sort of data. Shouldn't that be open to all the fans?
Yeah, I mean, we've had that situation before back in 2009 when the fuel was part of the equation as such. They on a Saturday afternoon, they'd tell us how much weight the car was at the weighbridge, so we knew how much fuel they'd got on board and how much fuel they'd qualified. So it's a possibility. I'm just not sure how transparent the FIA want to be. That's the overall effect, really.
Matt, I'm just going to interrupt you to say a big thank you to the Patreons of Missed Apex Podcast. This show is literally funded, paid for, and brought to you by the patrons. And Matt, you and me, we have a serious risk of losing our day jobs because of how good the Slack group has been that we put on for our patrons.
It's really tragically good. I'll stop and have a look, and there'll be 300 comments in there on fascinating discussions, not just Formula One, but all aspects of life get covered in the Slack group.
Yeah.
And in an amusing and helpful way.
Yeah, there's lots of different threads in there. So imagine it like a place where 7 or 8 different WhatsApp groups and streams that you can choose to be a part of or not are in. And it's been a fantastic time. So all our patrons that support us at patreon.com, it's not /MissedApex. Oh, no, I think it's /map. But anyway, go on patreon.com and search Missed Apex Podcast. Everyone who supports us on there is in that Slack group. And I just want to say a great thanks to you guys and a great thanks to the guys who join the chat room regularly now, Matt, because we regularly have like 30-odd people live chatting in our YouTube stream.
Yes, and they offer a lot to the show, and they offer a lot to each other. There's a fascinating discussions that go on within just the chat. So please stop by and check it out.
Excellent. I'll leave you to keep talking about technology.
Indeed. So unless anyone else has anything specific to Mercedes, now might be a good time to go on to talk about the biggest catastrophe of the race that wasn't named Marcus Ericsson. And that would be Romain Grosjean's utter disaster when his car gave up the ghost.
Yeah, which was so painful to see because he'd made such good progress during qualifying and was making headway in the race as well. And it was actually a water leak that caused the problem. And obviously something that can't kind of, there's nobody to blame for, I suppose. It's one of those technicalities that can just appear out of nowhere. It's not like you can blame Renault, for argument's sake, or Ferrari or Mercedes. It's something that's been brought on by just a failure.
Yeah, but to me, the interesting thing is, number one, the performance differential between him and Magnussen was pretty epic. It was one of the two biggest performance differentials we saw. But also, they've got the Ferrari engine, and it is looking to be like a really proper competitor to the Mercedes engine, especially with the change in the aero regulations.
Yeah, and I think it's partly because Ferrari have followed the path that Mercedes have set. Obviously, they haven't gone completely down the same pathway in terms of the split turbo, but they have followed in terms of turbulent jet ignition. They're working with Marl in terms of the way that their combustion and everything else works around the internal combustion engine. So it's a race between the partners. This was all kicked off with how integrated Mercedes HPP was with Petronas when we first came into this formula in 2014. And it appears that Ferrari is starting to make strides with their partner with Marl and the products that they supply and develop with Ferrari.
Mm. So I'm sorry, it seems like then the challenge still for Ferrari, they're stout on Sunday as far as the power plant is concerned. And a Ferrari chassis, obviously, but we're talking about Haas, is the qualifying strength. And that was one of their goals, is to try to match what the Mercedes power plant was able to do in qualifying mode. it looks like they may have a little bit more work there to do, but could be a great season given that those two power plants are running at very similar output levels, apparently, on Sundays.
Yeah, but we also have to remember the problems that Mercedes had in pre-season testing. Towards the end of the test, they finished early and they ran into issues. Now, we don't know the exact ins and outs of what those issues were, but it is related to performance and longevity. And we're wondering now whether they can actually run the qualifying modes that they have in the past. That could be part of the reason why we've seen this closing of the two in terms of qualifying, whether that's something to do with the lubricants that are being run, because obviously we know the problem that they had in them in last season in that respect as well. So I don't think we're all down to Ferrari. I think there might be a little bit of a falling back perhaps from the Mercedes side of things. I think we're kind of seeing a convergence.
Well, at a certain point, there's only marginal gains Mercedes is going to be able to make. And Ferrari had more room for improvement, and they were up to the task. I have to hand it to them. It did not look like this a year ago. A year ago, you were thinking, oh, man, it's just going to keep on being a disaster. But I'm also delighted for Haas because they have gone very much their own way this point with the rest of the car. And I'm also hearing that the Dallara chassis is really one of the better ones currently parked in the paddock.
Yeah, I mean, Dallara build the chassis. They don't design it. It's still a Haas design. Obviously, the original design was a collaboration between Ferrari and Haas. But this time around, it's fully a Haas design. And they just send that off for Dallara for construction. They will have some input, I would imagine, into some of the design aspect of the chassis. But predominantly, it's IP created by Haas.
That's fascinating, actually. I hadn't really thought about it like that. It's a bit like when you sort of order your mug and you send it over to the company to have it made. So it's a bit of a collaboration. They'll say what they want and Dallara will say, you know, well, that might be possible. This might not be possible. What compromises would you like to make based on the feedback we've given to your design? So that's fascinating. When you say it's a Dallara chassis, I've just got in my head, oh, someone else makes their chassis.
No, they could ask Dallara to build the chassis. The regulations permit that, but they don't. It's Haas IP and it's Dallara that build it for them because they don't have the construction within their realm. So they part that out to another company.
Summers, yes. summersf1.co.uk. Thank you once again for bringing some tech class to Missed Apex Podcast. Now, you do some tech analysis for motorsport.com. But you also have your own blog at summersf1.co.uk. And I love it when you just sort of have that freedom on your site when you do your personal blogs. I mean, they're long. Don't get me wrong. They're long. Sometimes I skip through to a word I recognize. But I think that's when we see the best of you sometimes.
Yeah, it is a difficult one to do, isn't it? Because I am reined in when I've worked for others in the past. You have to consider the type of readership that are wanting to put their time and effort into my stuff. And obviously when I'm on my own blog, I don't have to make that consideration. These are my thoughts and I will say what I want.
I can absolutely relate to that because I've done a couple of client podcasts and, you know, very serious subjects sometimes like health and things. And they say something and you go, I have got the most amazing joke, but I've got to rein it in and wait for something that's truly my own product.
That's it. It's such a difficult balancing act because some of the work that I do with motorsport.com and some of the other sites I've worked with in the past, you just want to carry on and explore what you're talking about, but you know you have to kind of rein it in and keep it simple.
Cheers, Summers. We love you.
Absolutely. And the chat room is asking when you're going to offer a custom chassis from Mist Apex there, Spanners.
I mean, it will mostly be the shape of my Peugeot 2008 because I like comfort. That's what I'm built for.
All right, then. Well, if anyone, unless there's anything else on Haas, we should probably talk about the Renault power unit and Red Bull Renault and Toro Rosso because it appears that the quick fix is getting less quick by the second.
Yeah, and I fear it's to do with a collaboration that's happened down at Viri with the Infinity Group. So obviously Infinity have come on board and Viri and Infinity have decided Sorry, Viry is the place where Renault are housed in France for spanners and the rest of the podcast. So Viry and Infiniti, they've collaborated on the new design, and basically they've decided they're going to build some of the components in-house. That means that then they have control over the quality and the performance of those components. But unfortunately, it appears that they've had some problems with the quality and the performance of those components. So they've had to switch back to last year's MG UK, which wasn't supplied by those guys. It was supplied by an out-of-house supplier, which has obviously meant that they can't quite do what they wanted to do with the MG UK, for starters at least. And they obviously have some other remedial issues as well going around the rest of the power unit.
Right. And that larger fix, the big step they're looking for, that's not going to show up till Canada now. Is that correct?
That's what I'm being told, which kind of syncs with where they might be at in terms of the allocation, because we must remember that they can only have 4 power units this season. So in terms of usage, Canada strikes me as a good stopping position for the units as such, as long as they don't have an abundance of failures in between.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and then I'll let Ken jump in, is in the case of Red Bull particularly, it's not just the engine. That chassis needs some help. And unlike previous years, they're actually willing to admit it. So what do you think of that, Ken?
Well, so Nui does clever things, and Summers can speak more authoritatively on this, but I empathize with the challenge that Red Bull had in setting up that new chassis, just because it was the aerodynamics of that were tied into how the suspension system worked. And so the suspension system that they had designed that around to get the aero to work at its best. They had to change horses midstream, and that's a difficult thing. And setting up one of these cars is incredibly complex. So perhaps we should not be too surprised that the drivers are saying that it was a handful to get the setup right and a challenge to drive. But I'll let Summers expand on that a little bit more authoritatively. But I just wanted to ask, though, a little bit about the MG UK situation on that. Do you have an idea as to what the penalty might be in performance, say in lap time or however, whatever other metric that they're suffering from with that?
Well, if we listen to Christian Horner, in totality, they're losing about 50 horsepower to Ferrari and Mercedes. I'm not quite sure you can put that kind of number on it, to be fair. And as we know, it's all very circuit dependent. So the MG UK's role in providing power to the entire power unit is 160 horsepower. Now, is it always supplying 160 horsepower? It's not always doing that. So it's all relative at the end of the day. So it comes down to how hard can they drive the MG UK for those periods of time as well. And they might just be losing a few horsepower here and there, but it's all adding up to lap time they're losing, be it qualifying or the race.
Hey, Summer, slight tangent from the chat room. James Funnel, who I know for a fact should be studying for a maths exam, young sir, says, I think that Newey gets too much praise. He is one person as part of a massive team. So with that 50 horsepower or whatever deficit, people are always talking about, well, they've got the aero to make up for it in the corners. But, you know, the Lord of Whispers that's been whispering in my little ear, and your sources are probably better than mine, say that this is really the least involved Adrian Newey has been in an aero development plan out of the whole time in Red Bull.
Yeah, well, that's an obvious thing in reality, because he stepped away from the sport. You know, they've got him involved in other facets. They're working with in yachting and all sorts of other areas where Adrian wanted to impress on his sort of aero style. So he did step away from Red Bull. And you have very good people at Red Bull anyway. Dan Fallows is head of aerodynamics. You've got Rod Marshall down there. You know, there's key personnel that are still at Red Bull Racing that have been there for 10 years, perhaps. So it's not all about Newey, as just been mentioned. But obviously, it all falls onto Nui because he is what most determined to be an aero guru. And, you know, he is in reality. Unfortunately, there's no stepping away from that. And if Red Bull haven't got him fully on side, then that's unfortunate. But he could have been at Ferrari. Ferrari did try to poach him. And that's why they allowed him to step away from Red Bull and work on other projects as well.
Right. So we have a quick question from the chat room about Mercedes-Benz. And I know that Ferrari requested two things from the FIA. One was suspension. The other one was the oil. And Ian Caldwell would like to know, has Mercedes-Benz engine been affected by that oil usage inquiry?
Well, Mercedes are saying no. They're not being affected by it. And it was all just a ploy from Red Bull to arrange something that was never going to happen. But you have to say that in qualifying mode, there were a leap beyond everybody else. And you can use or burn oil to make horsepower. So it is a possibility that they've lost some performance in that respect. But nobody will actually go on record and make that statement. I have tried, believe me.
I do believe you. Well, I had a question of my own, and that revolved around the Toro Rosso, actually, because I was fascinated to see the new member of their pit crew wandering around with a giant bottle on his back, waiting to refill the pneumatic system of the car. And I know we've seen it before. Cars have to pit for this reason. But is that going to be a normal part of their pit stops, or is that guy there just in case something starts to leak?
He's there just in case something's about to leak. All of the teams have them ready and steady. But I have a feeling that Toro Rosso have realised that there might be somewhat of an issue in some of the modes that they have to run for a race in terms of having to top this up on occasion. And that's why we saw the Ghostbuster pack in the pit lane.
Absolutely. And now, what exactly is that system used for our listeners who aren't as OCD in their devotion to tech, if I can say that, offending anybody?
Okay, so a pneumatic valve system, it was bought into F1 about a decade ago. It's been used predominantly in F1 for the last decade. It was bought in at the end of the last turbo generation by Renault themselves. So it's been around for a very long time. But basically, it's all to do with the valves and the way that the valves operate. Under extreme usage, a spring and collet wasn't good enough. So they decided to change to the pneumatic system, which is obviously driven by an air system. And that's what the top-up procedure is all about, is keeping pressure in the system so that the valves operate.
It would probably be bad if the valve stopped operating, I'm guessing.
It certainly would. You'd be a failure.
All right, well, let's move on and have a brief chat about Williams, because Felipe Massa looked very, very lonely out on track. Is there going to be anybody for him to race with by the time we get to the end of the season?
Yeah, I think so. I kind of think that Williams might be a step ahead of some of the opposition at the moment. But in terms of development, I certainly see Force India coming back onto the back of the Williams, especially as we've seen they tend to come with a weaker car at the start of the season and focus a lot of development at stages. So Barcelona will see quite a big update from Force India rather than this sort of race by race upgrade packages that we see from the big teams like your Ferraris, Mercedes and Red Bulls, who really have the budget to be able to put that development in each Grand Prix.
And at the same time, we've seen them change their color, and I believe we've just about seen the last of Vijay Mallya. So what does this portend for Force India? Because as I look back, what I see is sometimes they would show up with a strong car at the beginning and try and make it last a whole season. Then they would start with that car, and then halfway through the next season, they would show up with a big update. It seems like they're sort of playing a longer than yearly development cycle to take advantage of when prize money and so forth gets handed to them so they can stay on top of their suppliers.
I think the biggest change for Force India of late, well, it's actually 2 years ago now, but that's how time flies in Formula One, was the switch to their away from their own wind tunnel to the wind tunnel in Cologne of Toyota's. And that's had a massive impact on the way in which Force India are able to operate, because a lot of their staff have had to move out to the Cologne tunnel to be able to work on the aero updates. It's sort of an isolated situation. And I think that's had quite an impact on the way that they're working now at 60% rather than a pretend 50%, because their tunnel was actually so poor. It was actually the same tunnel that Jordan used, and how many iterations have we had of that team since then? I think from that perspective, it's a case of just Force India making leaps towards the other teams in terms of development.
Banners.
Yo, are you covering Honda a bit later, Matt?
I have number 5, Honda Shake and Bake. So yes, we will be talking about Honda.
Oh, that's
a bit
okay.
Late.
Yeah, it's just the chat room are asking. And if you want to join the people in the chat room, why not find my channel on YouTube by searching for Spanners Ready? If you can't find it there, go to missedapexpodcast.com/livestream. And the link is there. Come join in the fun. Also, while you're at it, why not find us on other places in social media? Join the Facebook group by searching Missed Apex Podcast on Facebook. And find us on Twitter by following me at Spanners Ready. I'm the best one. Follow me, everyone, look at me. Or Missed Apex F1 and MattPT55.
Indeed. Now, I'm also going to kind of answer my own question about Williams by pointing out that Grosjean got axed out of the race, and he would have been Mass's closest competitor until that happened. So if Haas can stay on top of development, they may also be in there with Force India, making those spots a little more interesting to watch. But of course, everybody really wants to know, what's the story with Honda? So what is the story with Honda? Their upshift sounded like someone dropped a bag of screws into a vacuum cleaner. So
a lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So what's going on there?
Well, I had what was called a grass gobbler when I was growing up, and that's exactly what the McLaren sounds like. It sounds like a bag of rice inside of a tumble dryer.
We have got a chat room theory from Evangelos Eterokalitos. He's from Greece. He says McHonda vibrations disturb the space-time continuum. That's why they look slow. Relativistically to our frame of reference. To me, that sounds like legit science.
Yeah, they've built a time machine.
If got back to the 1960s.
If they'd have gone back and got the MP44 and been competing with that.
I've got to just say, that's winning comment of the week at the moment, but I do not want to say it again, so somebody say something hilarious between now and the end of the show, please.
Nobody do that. I just want to, it's much more entertaining to listen to him try and say that again. So everybody, boring comments from now on, please. All right. So this is the thing for me, that it's clear that the vibrations, the engine are suffering. didn't show up when they tested it, but not until they put it into the car. And if I'm understanding correctly, that's because at that point, the engine becomes a stressed part of the car, essentially part of the suspension. And as such, it's subject to being vibrated or being resonated at different frequencies than they would have seen on the test bench. And I know we talked a bit about harmonic resonance with tires last year. So are we seeing a variation of that same thing playing out with the Honda engine?
Yeah, pretty much, unfortunately. And it's having a major impact on the gearbox. So they're having to short shift and long shift, and they're losing power because they're having to hold on to the revs. And it's really quite an interesting problem to have. And I was quite surprised at the pace that Alonso was able to manage during qualifying, if I'm being honest, just purely because of all those problems. But just backtracking slightly, there's several things that need to be talked about in respect to the Honda power unit, and it's the way in which that the management of making those power units differs to the other manufacturers. Honda sort of have these insular ideas. They're only using their own people. They've been forced by McLaren in recent times to develop relationships with people that are not part of the main Honda brigade as such. And that's problematic because it's almost forcing McLaren's will onto Honda as well, which kind of stresses their relationship. One of the main problems that I understand that they've had is that, firstly, they work with a single cylinder concept to start with. All of the manufacturers do this. When Mercedes and Ferrari first started to build their power units, they suffered with the same issues that McLaren now have, or Honda now have, in terms of vibrations. Because when they actually take it from a single cylinder concept and build a full-scale internal combustion unit, you have problems in terms of the way that the cylinders operate with one another, and in terms of the combustion stroke. And that's part of the problem. Honda only work on their own test benches. They don't have a chassis dynamometer, as we've talked about on Tech Time in the past. It's quite important. And Mercedes started this hybrid era with one. And Ferrari and Renault, or through Red Bull, now have their own as well. And it's quite important in understanding how everything works in terms of the power unit when it's plugged into the chassis.
And that does put them rather far behind. But my question is, given the way that resonance works, is this something that they'll be able to attenuate rather than suppress altogether? Because all engines vibrate and all engines have resonance. So this can't be an entirely unfamiliar problem for them to have to solve.
I just want to say, before Summers answers that, I just want to say, if you're a listener sat at home and you're thinking, wow, I need to go back and listen to all of that again a couple of times, you're not alone. Like, that sounded like complete garbage, but I do find that when I listen back, it slowly starts to sink in and I get the Summoners infused into my brain.
Sometimes I must remember to try and speak more slowly.
Just remember, Spanners is listening to this.
I'm just trying to get my point across quickly because there is so much ground to cover. That's the real problem. There is so much to talk about in terms of the Honda.
Yes,
Matt, you're right. In terms of resolving this problem, Ferrari had this problem in 2014. They took it into 2014, and the way they dealt with it is in a very similar way to what you're talking about, is that they had to manage the situation, and it's something that McLaren and Honda are going to have to work together on to resolve, and they're starting to do that. I think that's why they seem to have better pacing in Australia, because they've realised what the problem is and they're already starting to address the problems.
So just real quick, you know, looking back at Renault, suffered a similar challenge, I guess we could say, right? You know, with Red Bull in 2014, and Red Bull took it upon themselves to get one of these chassis dynamometers or virtual test tracks or whatnot, right? You know, and but I believe that took quite a while for them to procure, it's a big thing, and you need to build a facility prepped specifically around such a thing. So that's a matter of many months, is the impression I got, given that Red Bull are rolling in money from selling fizzy sugar water. After all, that wasn't a budget issue. There was time constraints on that. So this, in other words, coming to right now for McLaren is a very bad situation, and that the testing that they have to do then means essentially what? Friday practice, essentially, if they get a new concept engine that they can mount in that car, they'll have to test it on the track then. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah. Basically, there's a couple of things there. AVL are the manufacturers of these sort of VTTs or chassis dynamometers that we're talking about, and they are an expensive piece of kit. They are a long lead time. It's not something that's just on the shelf. Oh, I want one of those. I'm going to go and buy one. So, you know, that's where the lead times come from. And the thing with Red Bull was that they were in a very difficult situation at that time because they'd almost fell out with Renault. To the point that they were actually thinking of switching to Mercedes. And obviously we all know what happened there. And now we find that Honda and McLaren's relationship is almost on the brink as well. So McLaren are also in this situation. Do they go out and buy an AVL unit? Do Honda go out and buy an AVL unit? Do they just go and switch power unit suppliers? You know, it's a very difficult argument to make.
Banners.
Yo, just some chat room comments. Summers, would you mind taking a few quick questions? Because Gary Gerhard says, please let Honda fix this stuff, he said stuff, and get some podiums. It's such a waste of Alonso's career. Othnell says Alonso made his bed, and Blackout suggests that Alonso has actually nowhere else to go. But the question from Ian Caldwell is, if Honda were to resolve the vibration issue, how close are they to, you know, Mercedes, Ferrari, etc.?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, because by resolving the issue, the harmonics issue, they're going to have to lose performance. There's no two ways about it. They're having to work around the problem. If, let's just imagine that the problem didn't exist, then I think they would be relatively close and somewhere around the sort of Renault power.
Yeah, well, this is it. I mean, you're aware that there's been a guy on Reddit who's claiming to be a Honda engineer, and he's saying, oh, yes, I've seen the bench testing, and the performance of the Honda engine is amazing. If only we could just fix this reliability. And this is what, you know, apparently he's speaking in a second language, but as an engineer myself and someone who works in development on complex electronic systems, I do get the suspicion that he's either not communicating well, or he's not talking like an engineer, because reliability has to be part of the design process. Without reliability, you actually don't have performance. So it seems a bit ridiculous for someone to claim, no, we've got this great performance, we've just got to make it survive contact with reality. Well, I'm sorry, but when you do make it survive contact with reality, you don't know what you're going to have to change. And the things you change may fundamentally affect the performance you thought you had. Basically, your performance was a red herring.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a big assumption, though. I mean, you raise a great point. And, you know, speaking of somebody who works with engineers as an engineer in an engineering company, I appreciate what you're saying, but you're presuming that the fix means that they're going to suffer in performance. And that's a likelihood, but that's an unknown, too, as well. So it's hard to say which way that goes, but that's a good idea for all McLaren Honda fans to keep in mind, that they may suffer.
Well, I'm curious, because if you don't design the engine to have the capacity to produce the power that your competitors have, you don't have a chance, reliability or not. So to me, fundamentally, the design has to include the capacity for getting close to the people you're trying to race.
Yeah, but you can't do reliability as an afterthought. It has to be an integral part of the design at every single step. I mean, you only have to look at how the other arms of the design have to work. You only have to look at Formula E and when they had to change the back wing of Lucas Degrassi's car, and the mechanics had no idea how to whip that back wing off quickly. Even things like replacing and maintainability have to run alongside just the pure design of the power. So no, you can't just say that. I honestly think it has to be integral.
Reliability, yeah, if the engine doesn't run at all, it's pointless. But we know the engine is run. We know it's been run on a test bench. The reliability issues they're suffering come from, according to this Reddit post, because they've followed too many disparate ideas and not done enough in-depth testing on the ones they are using. And that was my understanding of it. But I don't think, although I'm not an engineer, nor do I pretend to be one, well, except for on this show, of course, I don't think that disqualifies what he's saying as much as he's saying it in the vernacular and not in engineering speak, not only because it's not his first language.
He could be dumbing it down for Reddit, for sure.
Anyway, but I think Summers wanted to jump in, and then I had a completely different thing that I wanted to ask about before we got off of Honda altogether.
I just wanted to say that basically you have to consider reliability. It is a major factor in terms of the usability of the power units over the season. So now we're down to 4 power units. Next year, we're down to 3 power units. It's going to be a major consideration. And I understand where you're coming from, Matt. You do need to be able to push beyond the limits of somebody that's already at the top, but at least get somewhere near them with the power. You know, that's the problem. It's a very fine line to tread, unfortunately. And Honda seem to always go for the most aggressive solution. You know, the reason they're in the trouble they're in now is because they went with the most aggressive version to beat Mercedes in the first place. Oh, let's try and put a turbo right between the V, not pancake at either end. And from an engineering perspective and being able to get the power from the turbo, it was never on. It was never going to work. But they felt that was the way to go. They had to find something that could beat Mercedes straight away.
Yeah, I guess the point I was making is they could have designed a reliable engine that put out 450 brake horsepower and they would have been nowhere. They had to at least design something that would put them in the ballpark, even at the potential cost of reliability. You know, as my wife is fond of saying, good, fast, cheap, pick two. Fast was on the thing. And then for them, it was either power or reliability. And is power, fast, reliability, pick two. They went with power and fast. Reliability was, you know, because that's real world. You have to prioritize things. Well,
yeah, I just want to agree with you real quick there. And I don't think it's safe to assume that based upon the little post that is probably from an engineer at Honda R&D that they didn't take into account reliability. I think, as you say, Matt, they were pushed into a high creative mode. And the most important thing was ultimately it's all about lap time, and that they had to make the power figures. And it is a more of a horsepower formula currently, so they went full creativity to reach that, we got to remember that these are essentially prototype cars, and there are the stipulations that the motors, you know, you're limited to 4 per season, and so the reliability factors are in there for a very specific reason, because if you were limited to 4 per weekend, the cost would be astronomical, right? You know, so that was part of the reason for that, to keep costs under control. And so from a design engineering point, it makes the motor heavier. You have to design for all those things. But at the same time, rapid prototyping, the super creative, like you say, Matt, that is the way they had to go.
Banners.
Yeah, just before you move on to Ferrari, Ross Brawn, etc., and wrap the show up, I would like, if you don't mind, to teach people how to call in to Missed Apex Podcast. Well, they've got to turn the phone on. Pretty simple to call into Missed Apex Podcast, especially on Race Review, where we desperately want your opinions and talking points from the race. So all you need to do is go onto Skype and add Spanners Ready. I'll accept every single contact request. When you feel like calling in, call in. I will completely ignore you, but I will know you are waiting for my attention. And when there is an opportune moment, I will add you back into the group call and will hear from you. All you need is the Skype app and one of those headphone leads with the inline mics, and that will do. We may take your question off air. We may explore it in greater depth with you, but we really, really want to hear from you. Back to you, Trumpets.
All right. Well, I had planned to ask Summers a very complicated technical question about attenuating harmonic resonance because, you know, in my spare time, I am kind of a musician. And I have experimented with mass and weight, and there are lots of interesting tricks you can do depending upon where there are certain holes interrupting things. And you mentioned they absolutely would have to lose performance, but I'm wondering if it's if it would not have been possible using a combination of substance and redesign to properly deal with the issue so that the resonance doesn't interfere with the basic performance of the engine in the way that it is now in terms of creating these vibrations. Because clearly what's happening is you're getting acoustic peaks that are reinforcing each other from the engine and from the suspension from the outside coming in.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's always ways around these things. It's how much lead time you have to deal with the problem. You know, they've had since the first preseason test really to understand what was going on and try to put fixes in place. But we have to remember that all of the fixing points on an F1 car in terms of where the power unit fixes to the car are now mandated. So, you know, you are limited in some respects in terms of the placement of the power unit, but there are obviously other ways around that, as you've just mentioned, Matt.
Right. Okay. So there's two other Honda things to mention, one of which is that it's been rumored that Mario Illion has been spotted there or thereabouts. Have we heard anything definitive? And will that make any difference, do you think?
Well, I haven't heard any definitive, but I have heard the same thing. Illion's no longer working with Renault, Red Bull or Viri or, you know, the Renault lot as such. So he is able to contract with others and he has the knowledge of what he knew from going on at Renault. So he may be able to offer some assistance to the boys and girls down at Viri.
And the other thing that might also really help to turn the tide for Honda is this continued rumor that Sauber will be employing them next year. And for me, I have to say, I think it would be brilliant because McLaren would finally have a competitor if they both ran Honda engines.
Yeah, might give another reason to be in the seat.
I just got to interrupt. I beg your pardon. But did Matt Trumpets just say that Sauber could be a competitor of McLaren?
Yes, well, they both have Honda engines, right? Right now, McLaren is not competing with anyone because your engine is so far behind. At least they'd have someone with the same engine that they could properly claim to have beaten or not.
Well, I'm just thinking of the McLaren fans who may become slightly offended, let's say, of seeing those two competing at some equal levels. But I carry on, Summers. I do. Pardon me.
That's all right. I actually see it as partly a good thing, though, because one of the issues that McLaren have faced is being alone with Honda and not having another team from which data can be pulled from. So having Sauber on board would give them a huge advantage in terms of catching up to the other team, because that's another two cars that they've got lapping. It's another two lot of data that they'll have to work with and understand and know how to understand what the drivers do in terms of making changes to the power unit throughout a lap. So yeah, I think it would be a good thing. It's something that I've mentioned numerous times before. I've heard the rumor for a very long time, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be a reality. It just means that there's a rumor circulating.
Right.
So, and quick note, going back to the prior question, Matt and Summers, is that what you had spoken about as far as Mario Illion. I think you may have said something slightly different, but the advantage of Mario being contracted by McLaren to help manage that relationship with their engine supplier Honda is that he'd be able to help the boys and girls at Honda's R&D facility in Sakura or wherever that is in Japan, as well as I think concurrently he speaks engine speak, so to speak, better than most. And so he would be able to communicate to McLaren as well as to where how that relationship can be bettered as well. And you had, and I just mentioned that only because you had mentioned Châtillon or whatever that other facility is at our friends. Pardon the interruption. Go ahead, Matt.
No, I think that kind of wraps up our current knowledge of Honda and McLaren. But speaking of rumors, I was going to say, is the big rumor now is that Giovinazzi might actually be driving for Sauber again. Have we had any update on Wehrlein and his health?
I've not heard anything about Wehrlein. I think it's been taken on a case-by-case and race-by-race situation. You know, I think he'll go to the next race, and if he's not fit, he will declare himself as such. I think he needs to make that decision prior to qualifying or prior to P3 to at least give Giovinazzi some more seat time if that's going to happen, just because familiarisation-wise, it might help Giovinazzi. That's the only problem that I see with running a third driver in that kind of situation.
We don't seem to be hearing a lot from Wehrlein explaining that injury. That's making me a little bit sceptical as well. It seems to me kind of like he might have fallen out of favour, and he's been, I don't know, is it some kind of punishment? Is it some kind of just, you know, tell everybody that you're injured, Giovinazzi is going to have a little bit of a go, you bide your time, if you're lucky, son, you'll get back in?
Well, real quick, you know what? I'll just mention one thing that I saw that may be helpful in our perspective is that former guest of this fabulous podcast, Will Buxton, had mentioned that he was surprised at the compact nature of Wehrlein's training regime in order to be ready for these upcoming races, given that he wasn't ready already. And other drivers who did not have to recuperate from an injury where he had more weeks to prepare. And so he kind of added that perspective. And I think that's important in that Will Buxton is fairly close with a lot of the drivers, probably has a little bit better understanding of what that training regime must be like.
I also think it comes down to 2017 regulations as well. If we'd have been in a 2016 race and that had have happened, I think Pascal would have been fine. But having to step up to the G-forces that they're now undergoing for 2017, that's the main issue. The cars have got so much quicker and are so much more physical that it's had an impact on how he can race.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're hearing numbers like 8 Gs through some of those corners. And if you've got anything wrong with you, you're going to know it very much at that point, and back injuries are the worst for healing. They're very hard to deal with. So we haven't really talked a lot about Ferrari. Perhaps that's because they've won. But before we jump on to Ross's little club, is there anything that you would like to get out there? Anything you're looking forward to other than this rumored new cylinder that they've got running?
Ferrari have just done a very good job all round. That's my opinion of what's gone down at Ferrari. That they've, for many years, they've focused too heavily on one particular part of the car, and it's come to bite them because they've concentrated on that whilst everybody else has kind of driven off into the distance with looking at everything. So I think it's more of a holistic approach that they've taken under the new guidance that they've got down at Maranello. So, yeah, I'm just kind of impressed with how they've managed to turn things around, and it's a long time coming, really. Ferrari have kind of just been in the pack as such, and now they're back where they really deserve to be, I suppose.
Yeah, it's nice to see them finally turning it around, and it's nice to see someone besides Mercedes atop the podium on merit and not just because the two drivers decide to crash into each other. Anyway, you got a plug for us, Spanners, or a bumper?
Well, I was just keeping an eye on the old time there, to be honest. I know Ken gets tired this time of the afternoon over there on the West Coast.
Oh dear, that was not a Formula One gesture.
Well, I'll tell you what, speaking of Ken, where can people find you on the internet, Ken? Because you are very much a conversation starter on Twitter. You get some great threads going.
I'm at Vortex Modio on the Twitter sphere, and that's VORTEXMOTIO, and I'm happy to interact with anybody, and I try to keep abreast of the interesting questions of the day.
And also, it is Ken a lot of the time that is on the Missed Apex F1 Twitter account. So if it seems controversial, it definitely wasn't me.
It's all my fault, I'm sure.
Come on, Matt. When are you going to bring this tech bonanza to an end?
Well, I As soon as we finish the next part of the show.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. That's why I asked for the bumper, you know.
Which one? What bumper do you want?
Oh, it doesn't matter. I didn't know if you had one. If not, I'll just carry on.
I've totally got one. I stole one from Lean Angle Podcast, our sister MotoGP show. Here we go. Oh, I turned my sound down.
That's the best bumper I've ever heard.
Try again. That's how the young motorbike people do it. Oh, go.
Okay. I'm not sure where to go after that. But the other big news is, of course, that we're now officially hearing that Ross Brawn is putting together a group to prepare for the 2020 regulations. And I will just let our listeners know that it's possible the three of us had a minor and not at all lengthy chat about what might make the sport work better. And as much time as Spanners will give us, we are now going to jump into that. And now, first and foremost, and possibly one of the only things that we can see some changes happening in before the new regulations, is going to do with overtaking. And we've heard the turbulent air, which had been around a second and a half in 2016. Most drivers are reporting 2 or 2.5 seconds. They're running into turbulent air. But is there anything they can do about it under these regulations? What can they do about it under the next regulations? And why exactly is that a problem anyway? Because it didn't used to be a problem and the car still had wings.
Right. Okay. So there's numerous questions there to answer, isn't there? Well, the first thing I'd like to say is that I've been championing overtaking working group, a technical working group, an independent working group for a long time now. It was my opinion that the sport really needed that to make enhancements, because if you just deal with the strategy group, unfortunately you end up in politics. We need somebody to advise the sport and the FIA the direction that the sport needs to take in order to make the show better, instead of just making willy-nilly decisions on what they think will work. So we're going to have a research and development program now. The last time that happened was on the lead up to 2009, but there was only 500,000 put into it. You know, that kind of number is just not significant enough to make an impact on understanding the true nature of what goes on with these machines and understanding how each of them interact with one another, because that's essentially why we have these problems. Because it's all down to the wake, basically, that's been generated by the lead car. You know, we all hear that problem. Oh, we can't get into the zone what allows me to get to overtake.
Summers, I'm so gutted for you, because you've been talking to us for ages about the solution to that, which is, you know, sticking these things behind the front wing. And then Craig Summerfield, Scarbs F1, fantastic bloke that he is, he comes along and publishes it. And now you just sound like you're copying him. But we will vouch for you that you've been talking about that for ages.
Yeah, I mean, look, I really like the article that Craig did recently. It's up on his Drive Tribe account, if anybody wants to go and check it out, or go to his Twitter account. It's Scarbs F1. He's now Scarbs Tech.
Scarbs Tech,
Covers more than just F1 these days. So, yeah, I'd recommend going to check that out. Craig had a very balanced look at the way in which the rules could be changed in order to improve the on-track action. But predominantly, the problem that we all talk about is the wake that is generated by the lead car. And as I've said, these rules were only going to make that worse, because unfortunately, we've empowered the diffuser and we've also empowered the rear wing, and that changes the upwash. So the diffuser and the rear wing effectively talk to one another. They create aero structures that have to work in unison with one another. And if you change their position, which we have for this year, you either strengthen or loosen the aero connection.
Paul Wright, on this point, asks, does it make sense at the moment for a de facto midfield team to have simpler aero surfaces to limit the loss from following? So could, say Toro Rosso just say, well, let's sacrifice out-and-out performance and let's just make it so that we can run in the midfield without getting our aero disrupted by this wake from the cars in front?
No, because downforce is king at the end of the day. And the reason that they will always try to pile on downforce, because you win by being in the corners and putting that power down in the corners. The VMAX is very similar to all of the cars. The only time that we've seen that have a good effect over the last few years was Williams, but that was at the start of the hybrid era where nobody really had a good handle on how that differential would work. So I just don't see that as a plausible option, really, unfortunately.
So a quick question for on behalf of our listeners, Summers, why don't you explain VMAX and the significance? What does VMAX mean?
Okay, so VMAX is the terminal velocity of the car. It's the overall speed that the car can make on a straight, depending on how fast the power unit is working. A lot of the teams can actually go quicker than they actually always do. They will scale the VMAX back in order that they've got more performance throughout the rest of the circuit. It's a trade-off.
And so what we're talking about basically is the aerodynamic limit as to how that horsepower that a car has, and it can only go so fast, and then it's reached its terminal velocity. And then what you're talking about is tuning then the chassis, the wings, whatnot, to get better performance out of the corners. And even though that they may take away a little bit of the top end, it's still a quicker lap time if they're able to get more mid-corner speed and faster exit speeds then right out of the corner. Is that correct?
That's exactly it. Yeah, you're always going to gain more if you can corner quicker.
And that we saw last year, because the cars that were winning regularly, the Mercedes, were rarely the fastest in a straight line or the fastest through the speed traps. So it's obvious that it's worth the loss in straight line speed to be quicker through the corners. And that's simply down to the math, because you're going slower in the corners than you are in the straight line. So percentage wise, every increase is a bigger percentage increase. So therefore, you gain more lap time.
Quite correct.
Oh my God. Wait, so wait, then you got that on tape, right, Spanners? You said I was correct. I will treasure that for all time.
I tell you what, I wish we could get on tape the chat room comments, which is saying they play Summers Bingo. And they're saying just Y250 to go. And they're also
coming up.
Hannah's also suggesting they might make a missed Apex race review bingo at some point. Hey, for the Summers one, you need to include, oh no, it's all about the aero.
Thanks, Spanners.
You're welcome.
When have we heard Summers say to Spanners, that's absolutely correct? I'm really not remembering that candidly. But
do you know what, Ken? If you can't say anything candidly nice, don't say anything at all. Didn't your mother never tell you that?
Yeah, pardon me for being candid, Spanners. I apologize.
Candidly.
But Summers, I just kind of wanted to follow up on that general concept, though, looking at 2020. And that I think really the significant metric that I would hope that Braun and his team would be looking at in regards to the regulations for 2020 is the distance behind a lead car that another car can follow through a turn. And right now, I mean, we had that feedback after Barcelona testing and Albert Park that it's now at 2 to 2.5 seconds, and it had been at a second to a second and a half. And we had DRS because it was a second to a second and a half in the turns. So I don't know the answer to this question, but I would think then the question is, well, where is it that metric needs to be? Does it need to be a half second, whatever, 3/4 of a second or a quarter second behind another car? Because at the end of the day, you don't want to have something like what NASCAR had, or the I think IndyCars, where you have lead changes, cars changing position multiple times per lap, say like on the super speedways. I know the IndyCars used to do this because the drag was significant that any car that followed another would instantly whip past it. And so at the end of the day, you don't want easy passes, but you want what the drivers want and the fans want, which is to be able to race close together and be able to fight hard to get that pass.
Well, I think there's several things going on there. A lot of the talk that we always get when we talk about changing the way in which downforce is created to allow for overtaking is everybody talks about ground effect. That is the silver bullet. We must move to ground effect. This is the thing that's going to make it work better. And I do have a bit of an issue with that, because let's look at IndyCar and what they did in 2015, was it, when they moved to allow the Chevy and the Honda aero packages. Now, that was the DW12 that had for years allowed the cars to race close together, and it's a ground effect car. It's not a full ground effect car, but it is predominantly using ground effects to create downforce. Now, as soon as Honda and Chevy were allowed to make more aggressive downforce packages, they loaded the upper surface of the car, and that then changed the way in which the racing happened. It made the cars much draggier. It made them much more susceptible to the wake, and it was much more. There was much more turbulence, and it made it difficult for cars to pass. Now, if we say in Formula One, well, we want to move towards ground effects, well, we're just going to have the same problem that they had in IndyCar, because you have all these upper surfaces that are still then allowed to be changed and modified, and that's where we have a problem in Formula One. It's the turbulence that's created by the cars, and we have to find a way to stop that problem.
Yes, Banners.
Well, I was just saying, unfortunately, we're out of time, and I think we're going to have to draw today's fascinating Tech Time episode to an end. Although, I have good news on that front, Matt. Not only are you very close to being able to produce Wafflecasts, we have also brought up to speed young Chris Stevens, Rainbow Sparkles, to produce fully, and he is ready as a stand-in producer as well. So, if you're game, lads, I'm happy to put on, you know, midweek Wafflecasts with no restrictions, no time limits. Just crack on. Talk to your heart's content.
Okay. Does that mean we have to stop talking now?
Unfortunately, it does, because it's a school night tomorrow, as Sandra does point out in the chat room. So, Matt, what are you hocking on the internet these days?
Well, as always, I am hocking my wife's books, Amanda Weaver, A. Weaver Writes on the Twitters. And buy them for your significant other so that they may entertain themselves while you watch the race.
And while we're at it, Chris Stevens has been doing a fantastic job on Lean Angle podcast. And although we are an independent podcast, we have got a lot of association and friendship and warm fuzzy feelings to Downforce Radio, the nation's motorsport station. In fact, you can find this podcast on their feed. Some of the other podcasts that we've contributed as a little stable towards Downforce Radio are Lean Angle Podcast with Chris Stevens and Ryan Ferret-Ferris, covering witchcraft of motorcycles. Also, E-Radio Show will be covering the very, very tense and dramatic Mexican E-Prix that happened on Saturday. We're going to be recording that tomorrow night, so make sure you find E-Radio Show in the week. I'll also be on there. I have some savage words for Channel 5 and some support for Lucas Degrassi. Absolutely epic tactics by Apt Schalfer Racing Team. I think that's how you pronounce it. Also, we have a comment of the week.
Comment of the week.
Now, Matt, I desperately wanted to give it to James Funnel because flattery will get you everywhere. Spanners, have you ever been a radio DJ? You seem to have the perfect host voice. I'm available for offers. Come give me a ring. But in fact, Matt, I think we do have to give it to the one that I may struggle to say.
I would love to hear you say it.
All right, here we go. I'm going to say it. Evangelios, et curriculicos. Muck Honda vibrations disturb the space-time I didn't even fail at the bit I was going to fail. Muck Honda vibrations disturb the space-time... Yeah, I should definitely be on radio. McLaren vibrations disturb the space-time continuum. That's why they look slow relativistically to our frame of reference.
Comment of the week.
Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. So join us next week when we will be reviewing the Grand Prix from China. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex Tech Time. Matt, I think I definitely got away with that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.